I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere, a holistic exploration of individual health, community, and culture. The topics we'll be discussing on this show will address health for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Middleton, and tonight we have Leah Roshaki joining us. She's a certified Rolfer, and she's going to tell us about Rolfing and a little bit about the kind of conditions that she treats. And one thing I want to say about Leah is she's just got an incredible, incredible knowledge and depth of knowledge with the human body. And I think you'll really join me in awe as we explore how the body works and the intricacies that she's able to take us through.
And my name is Samantha Berg. I want to welcome everybody as well this evening. Leah has been practicing in the Valley since 2004. And she's actually worked on me, and she's worked on Kevin. And Rolfing is really fascinating to me. I just love talking to Leah about all the different ways the different parts of the body work together. So, but before we get there, I want to get a little bit of information from Leah on her background and what inspired her to become a Rolfer. So take it away, Leah.
Thanks, Sam and Kevin. Thanks for having me here. I'm excited for this opportunity. I'm openly biased about Rolfing, so I'll just lead with that. I think it's important for me to state my biases early and loud. Rolfing changed my life, honestly, and that's not why I became a practitioner. Those are two actually separate events. But I had injured my back in 1989 when I was a senior in high school and a competitive swimmer at a pretty high level. And I injured a disc in my lower back, which ended up paralyzing my left leg. And this situation was handled with surgery, a laminectomy at the time, that left me in considerable pain and an inability to pick up my left foot. And it wasn't until 12 years later or so that a friend of mine in Anchorage suggested I see an acupuncturist. And that acupuncturist took me as far as he could take me, and then he suggested that the rest of my problems were structural in nature and that I needed to be Rolfed. That was a new term to me at the time, and I knew that he had helped me, and I trusted him, so I trusted his advice. And I called a woman in Anchorage that he had recommended, and in the first session, she helped me feel my left leg in places I had not felt since 1989 and that injury.
That's 12 years later.
Uh-huh. Yes. That's pretty amazing.
And that was in 1 hour, in one session. And I didn't really have a good understanding, honestly, of what Rolfing was at that point. And so I went back because I had never had that kind of effect.
Is the person who treated you in Anchorage still?
She's not. My first Rolfer is Duffy Allen, and Duffy moved on to faculty at the Rolf Institute about 8 years ago now. And so she left the state. She's married and has one, and I think she's making another baby currently. And she's in Vermont now. But I do know she comes back periodically and will see clients as she can. But she's made a huge impact in our community as a teacher and an educator at a really high level.
Great.
So she's been instrumental in lots of ways.
Awesome. I want to go back to something that you said that the acupuncturist said to you, which I think this is a really good place to pull things apart a little bit for people. But you said that the acupuncturist said, well, I can't help you anymore because the problem that you have is clearly structural. So so Kevin and I are acupuncturists, and we've said that to people in the past, and I just want to get your take on this. But what we see is that when we're treating with acupuncture, we're looking at what we call energetic flow or movement. You know, it's the acupuncture channels, parallel blood flow and nerve flow,
function.
Nerve function as well. And we can get a certain amount of movement, and things things continue to progress forward, but we'll hit a certain point where it's like we're not getting any more movement, or we feel like, you know, the person's getting better, but then they fall back. They're getting better, and then they fall back. So in our language, we would also say, we're coming up into some kind of a block that seems to be a little bit more solid. And if it's some kind of muscular skeletal thing, then we would generally say, well, this is a structural thing. It's something like bone on bone, or it's a nerve entrapped in tissue, or it's something
postural alignment.
Or maybe even repetitive things things that the person's doing over and over again, but something where no matter what we're doing, it's like we get a little bit of forward movement, but it goes back. Is that your experience of what structural is?
Those problems do point to some part of the structure not working coherently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Peter Kortnage, my first acupuncturist, saw in me, that he had used his toolbox to clear the energetic blockages, to heal my adrenals. When I came out of surgery, I came out of surgery with asthma.
Mm-hmm.
And as a competitive swimmer, I had never experienced that. So asthma was actually a huge part of my 12 years of suffering, honestly, and
wow.
Adrenal fatigue
mm-hmm.
was significant. So wow. Peter was very instrumental in educating me on how all those pieces fit together. And I was still left with a hip that basically because of the nerve injury, any of the nerves that come off of our spine are very large. They're like major conduits. Think of telephone wires, and we have small neighborhood lines, and we have giant statewide lines, right? And so the nerves coming off of the spine are actually the statewide guys. They're very large, and there's a lot of connective tissue that wraps them and embeds and connects with everything else in the neighborhood, including the bones. And tension on a line can actually pull bones, okay? Bones don't move by themselves, ever. And so Peter was very wise in his ability to see that my structure, my left leg in particular, was rotated inward at a very high degree all the way up into the hip bone, and his toolkit couldn't answer that issue. And good acupuncturists like yourselves know that our toolkit has a place for functional use and a limit.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally think that that's a really important thing as consumers, because we all have bodies and we're all interested in health, that it's really important to work with practitioners who actually know the limits of their toolkits and are willing to express that.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a really deep community full of a wide and good range of practitioners.
Absolutely.
With very interesting and overlapping and complementary toolkits.
Absolutely.
So I was able to be referred to a complementary toolkit out of Peter's practice. And that was very useful to me. Duffy was very patient and very clear. She does a tremendous amount of continuing education. She had been rolfing by that point for about 10 years and pursued continuing ed much higher rate than our community requires from good standing. And so she was able to work with my tissue in a visceral way. Deeper tissue in the body is a little bit more sophisticated and needs some better training to go mucking with, to bring out health and not the opposite. And so I was lucky to be referred to a pretty advanced rolfer. And so my more complex issue was able to be dealt with. Now, the other thing about my injury is that it was a spinal compression injury. The disc actually got squished out between the vertebrae. And this is a type of injury that rolfing in particular is very well suited to answer. So my experience with this process of healing through rolfing for this particular low back injury is very common. It's a very common reason that people pursue this kind of work. And it's one of the places that we can actually legally promise that we can cure people. I don't like to use that word. I can also legally promise that I can cure your carpal tunnel. And the reason that we can make those statements is because we can. And so one of the things that I'm very happy to have this opportunity to share with folks is that things can change, and it's experiential in nature. This isn't a belief system. This isn't a thought process. This isn't thinking good thoughts about your body or having a good yoga practice. All of those things are important. But in order for our bodies to find, to decompress and to have the space that we're sort of meant to have, we actually need the help of someone else. We need that touch. And in my training, I'm fascinated by the body, so I've chosen to pursue a lot of continuing education in the last 6 or 7 years. And what I've learned is that the body really does have the capacity to heal, and part of that, stimulating that capacity to heal requires the input from another person. We can't actually heal by ourselves, and healing happens in the space in between two people. Healing is not a question of giving energy or taking core energy. And that might have worked at a time when humans didn't have Wi-Fi and radio waves and all the other unseen stuff flying around. But rolfing is not Reiki. Rolfing is not other types of energy work that many people have come across in their paths of seeking wellness answers. Rolfing is biomechanical in nature, and my job is to work with the connective tissue. Now, connective tissue is also known as fascia. And
yeah, let's actually talk a little bit about fascia. What is it, and what role does it play in the healing and in the work you're doing?
Well, I'd like to back up and say that Dr. Rolf was the first woman in the world to earn her PhD in biochemistry from Columbia University in New York in 1917. And her thesis was that Western medicine was missing an organ. This organ is called connective tissue, or fascia, and this is the organ of shape in the body.
Could you explain a little bit about that? What does that mean exactly about the organ of shape?
That's a great question. It's a little hard to put into concrete words. We have some researchers out of Germany, one by the name of Robert Schleip in particular, S-C-H-L-E-I-P. He's easily found online. And he's led the way in cadaver lab work, anatomy lab work, and through some very careful and thoughtful and time-consuming work, they have repeatedly shown that connective tissue is one long, unbroken piece of fabric that wraps every structure in the body. It is the ground substance from which all of the structures in the body arise embryologically. It's also the communication bed and the hydration bed.
Let me just interrupt there for one moment, because I know that I've gone to cadaver labs and I've seen the bodies, and it appears in your average cadaver lab that they've moved all the fascia out of the way to get to the organs underneath and to get to the muscles. So in your average cadaver lab, you're not really going to see these interconnections in the same way, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. And we do cadaver lab work quite a bit differently. By we, I mean the structural integration or Rolfing community. There's a lab called Somanautics, run by a guy named Gil Hedley, H-E-D-L-E-Y. And Gil is also very available online. He has some great resources, including some very intense, honestly, photos and videos of cadaver labs. Our way of working. And in our way, there's nothing in the body that's extra. There's nothing in the body that gets that's there. I know it's shocking. Uh-huh. There's nothing in the body that has no job. And so we are very interested in how everything works together, okay? Western medicine is really great in making sure that each part is working well. But as a very wise osteopath named Jim Jealous discusses, he points out that when you build a house, for example, you have Home Depot drop the material off at the site. And then the construction crew shows up, and they make sure they have all the pieces. And then they turn to each other, and they say, great, we have all the parts. Where's the blueprint? How does this all go together? Rolfing comes at the body from that how does everything work together avenue, okay? So oftentimes people come into my practice and say, I've gotten the test results, I'm clean, but I still have this problem. And usually that's because it's in the relationships. Things are not working well in relationship to something else in the body. And so that's where I come in. That's where connective tissue is the guide for what is sliding and what is not sliding. Now, a minute ago I mentioned something about connective tissue wrapping all of the structures in the body. The reason that it's important to understand that is that the connective tissue wrapping is intended or designed to slide. That's what allows us to move. And when we have low-grade chronic or painful conditions that just never seem to go away, that's usually an indication of connective tissue that's gotten stuck to each other. So that slidability is no longer present.
How does that get stuck? Is that from a trauma? Is that from a postural issue, repetitive use?
Yes to all of those things.
And dehydration would go in there too?
Absolutely.
For a diet that's not working for the person?
Absolutely. Gravity is always pushing down on us. Our bodies are not designed to sit. We're not designed to bear our weight through our hips. And so Dr. Rolf was really brilliant. Again, I'm openly biased here. But she was working in the 40s and 50s, and she didn't do much work on the arms and hands, because in the 1940s and 50s, people did not have carpal tunnel. People were not using their bodies in the way we are today. They had different problems back then, okay? And so she organized the work in a way to define the work by principles and open up the possibility of different techniques that would be necessary to meet the needs of bodies in the future, because she wisely intuited that bodies in the future would have different tasks and therefore different injury patterns. And so she wanted the work to last, And so she didn't organize it by technique, which can cause some confusion from a consumer standpoint, because some Rolfers are using tools that frankly cause some pain while it's happening. And lots of people like to identify Rolfing with a painful deep tissue massage.
That's interesting, because I mean, many years ago, that is something I would hear commonly. Rolfing is amazing. It really works. Maybe it's a little bit uncomfortable. I've had Rolfing through you and also another practitioner. In neither case was it really uncomfortable. It actually felt terrific.
And I actually tell my patients that when I refer them to Leah, I say, if you experience anything on her table that's uncomfortable, your next treatment is on us. And we've never had to take anybody up on that. So, you know, even the people who say, no matter how many times we have this conversation, but I've heard it's painful, I say, look, I've never experienced anything painful on her table. So I promise you it's not painful. And really, I mean, in years, nobody's ever come back to me and said, I want my free treatment. So I can speak from experience and also from, you know, many of our patients who we've referred to Leah the way Leah works is not to work up or past the point of pain, because and you can speak a little bit about this to the audience, but the idea that when you get to that point, you might not be doing something therapeutic. You could potentially be causing harm.
It's true.
It's an interesting line, because mm-hmm. healing sometimes does involve some friction. You know, you're actually dealing in sensation.
Right, for sure. And one of the things that I find that people benefit from work in my room is that they have an opportunity to explore those cues that their body is giving. And oftentimes when we've lived in a lot of pain for a long period of time, all sensation in the body gets translated as pain. And this opportunity gives people a safe place and a supported table and witness to notice that maybe there might be something else happening in their body that isn't actually pain, is communication. And so now we're making friends with sensation. And the body does communicate with us. This is going at the mind-body question. And this was one of the underpinnings of Dr. Rolf's initial question and drives to this work, was how do the mind and the body work together? Now, the connective tissue is connected to the limbic brain. It's not connected to the conscious brain, to the cognitive brain. And that's an important thing to notice and to talk about, because it's extremely hard to put language on what people experience in a Rolfing room, because what they're experiencing is nonverbal.
Can you
the limbic brain.
Can you say a little bit more about what's the limbic brain versus
sure.
the cognitive brain?
The limbic brain is the part of the brain that runs your heart and your lungs and all the things that happen in your body that you don't have to think about to make happen, okay? So all the stuff that goes on without your conscious thought.
Breathing can
heartbeat,
be that.
All of that. Movement, all of those unthoughtful actions from the body. And this is the interface between the mind and the body. It's the cognitive brain and the limbic brain. Now, members of my community are studying this and have been studying this for a long time. There's a research project through Harvard Med School, Stanford Med School, and other top-notch research facilities. In fact, there's a Fascia Research Congress that's getting ready to meet at the end of March, where researchers come together with clinicians who actually work with the tissue in their hands and share ideas and discoveries and all of that kind of stuff. So this is very highly studied, and it's not a casual weekend warrior kind of training to become a Rolfer. It's important to acknowledge that, too. There's place for weekend warrior kind of therapies, but if people are really suffering from a long-term chronic condition, it's in their best interest to find someone who's pretty well-educated and has pursued a significant level of training, because ignorance can actually cause some damage in the body. And so Rolfing, that term, is actually trademarked, and we have set a standard of education as well as continuing education, ethics, and other aspects of the practice that we have to meet in order to call ourselves Rolfers. And so that's not negotiable. There are some people who use the term Rolfing without meeting those requirements. And we do actually have a legal arm, and we can pursue those those poor uses of the trademark, but I haven't personally done that. I try to educate folks and invite the opportunity to for people to build their own toolkit.
So you're saying somebody might go to a massage therapist and, you know, and experience maybe deep tissue work, and they might be told that this is a form of Rolfing. Or they might go to another modality and be told, well, this is sort of like, you know, they go to their physical therapist and they're told, well, this is kind of like Rolfing. And what you're saying is the only people who can do Rolfing are people who've actually graduated from the Rolf Institute.
So what's That's the correct. Credentialing? Mm-hmm. What is the question that a consumer would ask just to make sure that they're actually working with us? Is it a certified Rolfer? And then are there specializations within Rolfing that, you know, would be important to know about, too?
That's great. The one place that consumers can go if they're interested in this kind of work, there's two websites. One is called Rolf.org, R-O-L-F.O-R-G. The other is a little bit longer title, so let me talk about it first and then I'll give the website. It's the International Association of Structural Integrators. Now, I have to openly admit that I recently joined the board of this structure. This structure was formed about 10 years ago by members of the Rolf Institute and other schools that had formed after Dr. Rolf's death in the late 70s to teach some of the things that she had discovered and was teaching herself. Now, when she founded the Rolf Institute, they established the trademark, they established the standards, both in education and in practice. And so about 10 years ago, the Rolf Institute and some of the other schools that have popped up since the late 70s were growing a little concerned and didn't want to have weekend warrior kind of workshops available to people and end up with lower-trained folks using that same terminology.
And let me just interrupt here. So what would be a weekend warrior type of workshop?
I'm sorry. Yeah,
but how would you define that? What does that, mean to you?
12 or 16-hour kind of workshop where people are told that they are now able to practice.
Okay. So it's a crash course in some kind of body work, but it's not really based on the knowledge of the anatomy and physiology that you're trained in.
It's right. The scope that we have for my training is pretty significant. In fact, the first class, the first 6 or 8 weeks of class is all anatomy and physiology, not college A&P, but structural integration oriented A&P. And if at the end of that class, you have to pass a test. And if you don't pass that test, they will not allow you to pursue additional training until you establish your basic science knowledge. That's one example of the scope and the range. Now, we don't have diagnostic protocols. We do not diagnose. We do not prescribe. So our training is about manual therapy, but being as educated as possible in what we can do in the tissue with our hands, what our responsibilities are as practitioners, so that we can listen and evoke the innate health of our clients. That's the nature of the work, and it's a lifelong pursuit of education in the way that Dr. Rolf laid it out. And to get back to the International Association of Structural Integrators, that organization was founded to establish worldwide standards for work coming out of Dr. Rolf's model. There's 12 schools today, including the Rolf Institute, that has met those standards and have been recognized by the International Association of Structural Integrators. And so you can go to their website, which is www.theiasi.org. So it's theyasi.org.
I just want to interrupt here that we will put all of this on our Facebook page. Leah's going to give us some resources, and we'll put those up on a note on our Facebook page at Bridge to Everywhere on Facebook. So if you don't happen to have a pen right now, you'll be able to get it on Facebook after the broadcast.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Sam. So both of those sites have a locate a practitioner button where you can find a practitioner anywhere on the planet. And those practitioners are practitioners who have met and continue to meet the standards set out by either the International Association of Structural Integrators or by the Rolf Institute. I should also talk about Dr. Rolf never wanted the work to be called Rolfing. She never wanted us to be called Rolfers. and sometimes when people are really enamored with a particularly forward-thinking person, after that person's death, things are done that maybe that person would not have appreciated. And this is one of those examples. And so it is likely that in my lifetime practice, we'll lose the trademark on Rolfing, and we will all be known as structural integrators or SI practitioners. So I'm very careful to use both of those terms. I'm a Rolf SI practitioner.
Okay.
To acknowledge that my training came out of the Rolf Institute in particular. I am a structural integrator. There's 12 schools. The Rolf Institute is one. They are all graduating structural integrators. Okay, so you could access this work through an SI practitioner who hasn't gone to the Rolfe Institute but is still meeting the standards set out initially by the Rolfe Institute. So this is where it gets a little confusing for consumers.
Mm-hmm. Could you name some of those schools? So I mean, some of the terms may be familiar, and some of them people probably haven't heard of at all. So
we have a few practitioners from other schools in the state. One very common school is the Guild of Structural Integration. Internally, we call them guilders in the best possible way. We're Rolfers, they're guilders.
Yeah.
The Heller Work School. Those folks are called Heller Work SI practitioners. Tom Myers has a school called KMI. So you could be a KMI SI practitioner. But really, you're looking for either the Rolfe or the SI label. And if practitioners are using those labels, they're educated, they're probably paying their dues, they are doing their continuing education, they're meeting certain ethical requirements, and they're in good standing both with our community and with the state and other laws. We all carry malpractice insurance. In this state, workers' comp is covers SI work, Rolfe SI work. Some insurance plans cover it.
So it is getting some coverage through different insurance plans.
It is. And
great.
One of our elder Rolfers in the state, Mark Hutton, who's down in Kenai, did some great work in the late 80s educating decision makers on the Kenai Peninsula. And because of his great efforts, the Kenai Borough and the Kenai School District wrote Rolfing into their self-funded plans in the late 80s. So if you're an employee down there, of either the borough or the school district, Rolfing's covered fully. And so we're actually working today to collect that data and have that information available for decision makers, both of private insurance plans and also state and federal insurance plans. One of the jobs of the International Association of Structural Integrators is to make SI a household word.
Great.
And
that's great.
So let's do a little bit on distinguishing the difference between, let's say I'm trying to decide with my particular issue, should I go to a structural integrator? Should I go to a massage therapist? Should I go to a chiropractor? Should I go to a physical therapist? Should I go to an acupuncturist? Like, how do I define what's the best direction to go?
Great question. Let's come up with a common problem, because I think that'll help the discussion.
Let's just say fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm. Or we can say, how about something like sciatica? We can start there.
Let's start with sciatica. Fibromyalgia is good. Fibromyalgia, because of the weird and difficulty in differentiation between patients who are suffering from fibromyalgia, it can be a tough road. There's often a nutritional piece. There is a structural piece. There's a piece that is significant for fibro patients related to the unseen energy body that is unique to them. And it's been my experience that fibro patients are overwhelmed by a lot of the unseen magnetic communication that's flying around us. And until that part is cleared from there, well, I think it's an appropriate sensitivity.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, they just need a pretty sophisticated practitioner in order to help them clear that stuff. So acupuncture could clear fibro. My work can clear fibro. Massage probably won't get after it, mainly because massage therapists are generally aiming for muscle. Chiropractors are generally aiming for bone. I'm aiming for the white stuff that holds everything together, and most acupuncturists are directly or indirectly working with that same structure. And so for that reason, it's important to differentiate. Now, if we're talking sciatic pain or chronic low back pain.
Yeah, let's talk just, let's not even start with sciatica because it's a diagnosis. A lot of people don't have a diagnosis.
Exactly.
They just know that they've got chronic low back pain. They probably have some neck pain, and it hurts them in particular positions. Maybe it's worse when they're driving, or it feels worse when they wake up first thing in the morning. Maybe it's worse at the end of the day. But they just know that they've got some sort of back pain, chronic condition that just isn't improving no matter what they do.
And
so start there.
And oftentimes they've gone to their physician. The physician has run some tests. Everything looks normal. And yet the patient is clearly not okay. And so commonly people will try a massage therapist first or a chiropractor. And if those two modalities don't solve the problem, people have a choice. And they can either keep looking or they can accept this, that the massage might make them feel better for a few days or a day or two, same with the chiropractor. And then they get onto this sort of maintenance kind of approach where they're dependent on the massage or the chiropractor. Now, that's a choice. For some people, that might be, given everything else that's going on in their lives, that might actually be a really good way to handle it for a period of time. I can't speak to that part. But when people are ready to solve the problem, to actually get to the root cause of the problem, that's when a Rolfer or structural integrator can be of great service. We're working with the body as a physical structure, so the laws of physics apply to our bodies, and this is a place that Western medicine has not really gone before. Our posture is our structure, which informs our function. Okay, structure and function are related.
Could you say more about that? Just kind of unpack that a little bit.
Sure. This is what Dr. Andrew Taylor Still had sort of theorized back during the Civil War. He was a medical doctor on the Civil War battlefield, and his experiences there brought him to that idea. This is the basis of osteopathy, and Dr. Rolf furthered this study based on structure and function. We know this when we build our buildings.
Right.
This is a physical science that comes through in our sciences quite frequently. We all know this when we look at our houses. But for some reason, we've skipped the application of this knowledge to the body. And this is really, I think, a differentiation point that's pretty important and why my work is so successful.
Great.
So we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back, and we're talking with Leah Roshaki about Rolf structural integration. And we'll see you guys after the break.
I'm Kevin Middleton, and I'm here with Samantha Berg, and we're talking with Leah Roshaki, certified Rolfer. And we're just starting to talk about structure and function before we took a brief break, and we're going to revisit that here and just kind of see if there's any final comments on that. And then we'd like to talk maybe a little bit about what it's like to go to a Rolfing session and what a treatment plan is typically like.
Right. So we want to say, you know, let's say now we're back to this hypothetical patient with back pain, and they've decided that they are going to go into a Rolfer and give Rolfing a try. So what happens from the moment that they make the appointment, what does the evaluation look like, and what do the subsequent treatments look like? And we were just talking during the break with Leah. A lot of people have heard about Rolfing and have come to the understanding that they need to do a certain number of treatments for things to be effective. And so Leah asked if she could address a little bit on that level, that it's not that may have been a prior way of thinking about Rolfing, but you don't necessarily have to go through a set stepwise sequence in order to get Rolfing work done. So go ahead, Leah, if you want to finish up with the structure and function conversation, anything else
Sure.
you want to say on there?
Yeah, thanks. You know, when you drive around your neighborhood where you live and you look at the houses that you live among, you don't see the third story hanging out in front of the rest of the house, right? There's a stacking. There's an order and a relationship from the foundation to the roof, even if you're on a slab house, that there is some relationship there. And if you look around in members of your family, or if you look carefully at a full-length mirror in yourself, you might notice that your structure is not so organized. And that's what I'm talking about, that there's often pretty predictable pain and chronic patterning that comes from that organization in gravity as a whole. And you know as a homeowner probably that if your windows or your doors and your upper stories start closing badly or start being stuck very frequently, that the wise homeowner would probably not just repair the window or the door, but would want to check the foundation. So oftentimes people come into my office with pain in their shoulders, their neck, their low back, what I consider the second, third, and fourth stories of their body. And really the relationship that I'm inclined to work with is how do those second, third, or fourth stories relate to the feet, which are the foundation. And so that's one way to talk about structure and function, that if your body is if your shoulders are rounded, if all the things that your mother told you about standing up straight takes a lot of effort, then you're probably due for some maintenance work. Now, what I'd like to talk about is that a lot of people are educated that Rolfing requires a 10 series. Lots of people know about the 10 series. Rolfing has been present in Alaska since the late 60s. So there's a lot of really great Rolfers. There's about 40 of us in South Central. I'm the only one in the Valley at this time.
And
I hope that changes.
10 series means...
Ten sessions. Yes, yeah. Sir. And that comes from Dr. Rolf's attempt early on in the 40s and 50s to teach students what she was doing. This was intended as a teaching tool. This was never intended by Dr. Rolf for practitioners to use this approach in their offices. Now, after her death in the late 70s, there was some disruption in the way the work was taught. There was some disruption within the Rolfe Institute itself. Politics are politics. People in groups are people in groups. And some of this is pretty darn predictable and not necessarily worth going into. It happened a long time ago. But there was certainly a time immediately after Dr. Rolfe's death where they were really focused on what Dr. Rolfe did. And they were missing the sort of bigger edict that she left. As a PhD in biochem, she recognized the body would continue to change, science would continue to change. For example, early on in her work, she wrote at one point in the 40s that if you're working with a client on the table and the client is not crying, you're not deep enough. By her death in the 70s, she had completely come away from that.
Yeah, that I probably would end up having people take me up on my challenge
if that was still the case. But
right.
Let's also couch that in what Western medicine was doing in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. We were lobotomizing people. We were using pharmacology at rates we never do anymore. She was a scientist working within the range of what was happening in the world at that time.
Right.
And to her credit, she went with the trend of coming into ease, do it less is more, all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I'm speaking about this in very broad terms.
Sure, absolutely.
So, and I just want to clarify again what you were saying about it being a teaching tool. So my understanding from what you're saying is that this was a way that for new students, people who were becoming Rolfers, this was her way, the 10 series of teaching people in a very stepwise, organized way how to approach the body so that everything got covered. And what happened over time was this was sort of taken as dogma. First you do this, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this. But it wasn't necessarily looking very closely at the person on the table. And
I'm sure it actually generated results.
Yeah. And that's what I want to say, that there are people, really good practitioners in our area that are still using the 10 series. They're Rolfers. Mm-hmm. They are doing good work. They're absolutely helping people.
But
there's
different approaches. Right. When you get to another layer of depth in your work, you can take a look at the individual person sitting on your table and you can say, well, we don't really need to do this first. We need to do this, this, and this.
Well, what's interesting to me about the 10 series, I like what you're saying about in that way. And what's interesting to me is that I was taught the 10 series when I was a student. I've never used the 10 series as a practitioner because it doesn't apply to my clients and my toolkit. I was taught sophisticated ways to get at what the body is asking for and where the body is open for change and ready for change to meet the body's inherent order of what needs to happen when. Mm-hmm. And what is consistently amazing to me, it happened again today. I saw four clients, and two of them were new clients. And I don't have the 10 series in my head, but the 10 series teaches that you start with the feet or the breath.
Mm-hmm.
Every single new client starts with the feet or the breath. And I've been in practice since 04, and I can go back through all of my notes. I have never done a 10 series. All of my clients' sessions, first session, is either the foot or the feet or the breath.
Yeah.
And so there is a wisdom in the 10 series that I would suggest is sort of the paint-by-numbers approach to get people to get used to holding the paintbrush.
Well, first
get used
you
to touching the tissue.
First, you learn the rules
client.
And you understand the rules, and then you can break them. But I want to say, I was worked on by a Rolfer in the late 90s in Anchorage, Linda Jordan, and she's fantastic.
Yep.
And she actually used the 10 series plus 2 on me because I have scoliosis, and it was an amazing experience having the Rolfing work done.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, and then I had when I was in school, an osteopath took a look at me and said, "Wow, she could actually see the underlying pattern of the scoliosis, and she could see the work that Linda had done on top of it." And she said, "Wow, she really put you back together incredibly well." So
there's
great
wisdom in it.
My experience was very positive.
I saw Don Keller, and I think I was going there for low back and some tension in my neck and shoulders. In the very first session, he was working on my feet.
Exactly.
But what's interesting is that I came out of that session, I literally felt like I had a third lung operating. I was just incredible. And what a different way to experience life when you're getting that much oxygen. And so everything else is affected in that way. But I want to know, why is it feet and breath? What is it about that?
Foundation. And one of my favorite teachers invited me to think about the lungs as two helium-filled balloons with the strings tied underneath the arch of each foot, and that unless you have functioning lungs, you don't really have functioning feet. You don't get that lift through your arches in the feet. Now, we have three arches in the feet. We have the one that seems really obvious that everyone can name on the inside part of the foot, but we also have one on the outside part of the foot and one over the top, just under the ankle, so it kind of makes an H on the foot. And our modern shoes are really great for walking on pavement, and there's a lot of cushioning to allow for us to walk on pavement. But what that does, you'll notice that we all have those little bumps in the bottom of our shoes to lift that inside arch. And that basically locks down the lateral arch and the transverse arch, the one over the top of the foot. Now, there's about 24 bones in each foot, and the relationships of those bones, the movement of those bones within the fabric of connective tissue is actually what allows all the hinges above your feet to work soundly. So if the hinges in your feet aren't working, the hinges upstairs aren't working either. And so this is part of that relationship. And so we have breath, which is life.
And the same in Chinese medicine. Mm.
And lift, okay? And yep. One of the things that Rolfing is doing, and one of the reasons she developed the 10 series initially, was to help people learn the concept that gravity pushes down, and we stand up through that. So there are two forces at play in the body at all times, down and up. And one of my jobs as a Rolfer is to balance those two forces, okay? So if we think about the down, we think about feet. That's where we actually hit the earth, right? And up is the lungs, the breath.
And can you say this was really shocking to me to learn the number of bones that are below the knee?
Oh, more than a quarter of the bones in the body are found below the knee.
Isn't that?
That's also fascinating to me. How much is actually located below the knee?
Well, and for any engineers out there or designers, 24 bones in the cranium, 24 bones in each foot. We are long levers and pulleys in between. Okay, so from a mechanical standpoint, we're actually built to move forward. We're not built to stand. We're not built to sit. We're not built to be still. So what we find is a lot of people's chronic pain problems are coming from stillness. Mm-hmm. That need to sit in the car for a certain length of time, that need to be in front of the computer. My advice to them is not to stop driving your car, nor is my advice to them to get a different job. My advice is to help them find ways to make those activities sound in their bodies and to help their bodies come into a state of coherence, which functionally means resilience, so that their bodies can deal with whatever's coming and be able to recover quickly and to be able to keep moving forward.
Do you recommend for people that are working in an office environment, there's a certain amount of minutes they should be, you know, sitting and then walking around? Are there some recommendations you can make for how people would do that? Or are there exercises you can do as you're driving from Palmer to Anchorage, things that you can to start to get some circulation?
I tell people to hula or ossify. I tell people that they need to be doing the hula while they're driving. A lot of people tell me that they would get in a car accident. So I will say use at your own risk.
Okay, but not with a hoop, right?
Not with a hoop, but I had a chiropractor one time who made that statement about really just the hour that people spend in the car driving to Anchorage and then driving back at the end of it, or probably an hour, so it's really 3 hours in the car, depending on your day. I mean, that's a lot of time sitting in a way that we were not designed to sit.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, there's lots of ways. We're modern people, and we have lots of tools available to us. So I often am asked by my clients to come look at their car and come look at their seat. And so we'll do some bracing, and we'll talk about how they can find their sits bones and how they need to sit on top of their sits bones, not behind them nor in front of them, and that as much as possible, their feet need to be on the ground of the car. They need not to be overextending one hip or the other. And if they have a base of support underneath them, then their upper body has a place to rest into. So the chronic shoulder, neck, head stuff will probably diminish or be less problematic for them if there's a base of support underneath them. This is gravity. Again, we don't have our second and third stories in our homes hanging out in front of our foundation. And oftentimes that's the position that our seated cars and office chairs put us in. So it's really a question of changing that relationship. The other cue I give folks, if possible, is to use a stand-up desk for their computer station and a traditional sit-down desk for meetings. And that ensures that they're moving throughout the day. We're built to stand. Sometimes people use a stool to perch on if they need to be sitting at the or working on the computer for a long period of time. But it's also good to go get a drink of water. It's also good to go have a face-to-face conversation instead of sending an email to someone in your office. Those sorts of things can be really helpful. And so my job really is to draw people's attention and help them find their own awareness. My stock advice is listen to your body. Your body has the wisdom that it needs. So I'm not going to be walking around with you. What is your body telling you? Pain is often a cue to get up and move around. Pain is often a cue to check your posture. Are your feet underneath you? And that is the practice.
And you have a really cool stool in your office. So I've seen you use it and, you know, pick it up and move it around as you're working on me. So could you tell people what that is and where you get that? And I'm also curious if you have any feedback on those exercise balls that people sit
on. Sure. The stool I use is actually modeled on the exercise ball idea, but it's much smaller. A lot of us don't have office space that will accommodate that big, giant ball. And I tried using that for about 10 minutes and just got frustrated. I'm not at the beach. I want to work. This is a giant pain in my butt. I don't like it. And so I went online and I looked for a long time and found a stool called the Core Stool, K-O-R-E. And it was built and designed and built by some woodworkers, people who have to do handwork at a bench. And so they needed the support of something solid underneath them. A ball obviously wouldn't work in their community. And so they came up with basically a rocking base with a steel pole, steel shaft that adjusts for height, and a very nice soft cushion round top. So I can easily lift this stool up. It's very slim profile, probably weighs less than 10 pounds, but I haven't put it on a scale before. It's very light is my point. And I pick it up and carry it around my table without effort, without any kind of disruption to my practice or my interaction with my client. And it makes sure that I am sitting in a tripod. And like any mechanical structure, you need a base of support. And for humans, it's a tripod. Our 2 feet and our tailbone are actually the mechanical tripod in standing. And the stool allows me to be flat on my feet and my sits bone on top of my sits bones, which is another way to form a tripod. And so I can rock on this, and I can lean forward without losing my base. I'm pushing from my feet, and because of my underlying back injury, I have to be really attentive to my core. I have a pattern that's in me that I can collapse, and that can actually cause me physical pain. So the stool makes sure that I'm engaged from my feet to the roof of my mouth with my core muscles. And I'd like to take this opportunity to just give people a different definition of the word core muscles. Core muscles in my community are defined as all the muscles that lay against the bone from the feet to the roof of the mouth. This idea that core muscles are in your belly is, frankly, ignorant. And a lot of people are injured by limiting their attention to just what's happening in the belly. That would be a little like mucking with the main support beam in your house without doing any support work around it first. You're really going to hurt yourself if you're really just attending to the belly area.
So somebody who's just doing crunches, just like obsessive about their crunches, and just to get a six-pack abs, they're not.
And
it's not really functional.
That practitioners, trainers, all that stuff, depending on the kind of educational stream they're in, what kind of lineage they're learning from, they're going to have a different response to these words that I'm saying. And I'm just going to invite people to check into stuff they don't know. You know, any of us know a very small percentage of what's available out in the world, and I actually think that part of health, as I define it, is a willingness or an ability to go learn something new. And, you know, so it's great that you have tools that work, but there might be other ways to do things too. And we might serve our clients better if we have a big toolbox. So it's from that perspective, if I'm talking about core in a way that folks don't understand, check into it. There are lots of people talking about this for a reason. And so...
I think that it's easy to get, you know, there's a buzzword that kind of floats around and it goes very, very superficial. So everybody nods their head and thinks that you know, they're all talking about the same thing. You know, but as we're really looking at the human body in the way that you've been describing, this intricate, beautiful, interconnected web of everything affecting everything else, this functional relationship in the body, it just makes sense that you can't just isolate some muscles in your abdomen and think you're going to give your body some kind of a foundation. Really have to look beyond that.
It's true. And the connective tissue, I'd like to talk a little about that in detail. There's a great video that people can buy. It's a little expensive, but it's called Strolling Under the Skin. And it was put out by a French osteopath within the last few years. And I'm actually going to a conference at the end of March where I get to see his latest video where they've done this again at a different part of the body. But in Strolling Under the Skin, they put a very small camera into a living person's arm in the carpal tunnel area, and they're able to show what fascia looks like, what fascia is doing in a living body, and really it's an amazing visual explanation of a matrix and a fluid-filled matrix that is constantly in motion. constantly adapting. Connective tissue is what forms scar tissue. Connective tissue is what wears away to get you the diagnosis of arthritis. In my community, a reasonably healthy person, scar tissue can be picked back up. You are not stuck with scar tissue, and arthritis can go away. If you're young enough and healthy enough and have the good nutrition on board and you work with someone like me early enough, the body will regrow any tissue and the body will pick up any tissue that it's laid down. One of the jobs of connective tissue is to fill the hole. So if you're stabbed in battle, right, the connective tissue will race to that wound and fill the hole, right? There's a breach. Mm-hmm. That's threatening life. So there's a very quick response from the limbic brain, okay, which controls connective tissue, as we were speaking earlier. Now, the challenge with modern people is that we will often experience something similar to a stab wound or a cut, deep cut in a very secure, very safe, very appropriate surgical theater. And yet the body does not know that you are in a safe surgical theater. And so the body's response to a cut, it doesn't matter what the doctors are telling you, this is the physiologic response to having your body cut open, mm-hmm. is the connective tissue fills the gap.
So this would also apply, like, people who've had, a hysterectomy, they've had their uterus and their ovaries removed, they've had their gallbladder out, they've had their appendix removed, they've had their spleen removed, or they've just had some sort of internal surgery.
Or
going to show up.
Parts added.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A variety of parts can be added. Yeah. And so in all of those situations, the body has laid down more connective tissue. The layers in that area are not sliding, because there's more layers in the space. And if you think about our bodies, there's a finite amount of space. Also, there's no empty space in our body. It's either filled by connective tissue or organs. And so if you have a part removed, connective tissue and organs in the neighborhood will fill that space. It's also important to recognize that our organs are wrapped in layers of connective tissue, which are then hung with tethers. The organs are hung from the bony framework. So when you go to a chiropractor for a vertebrae that keeps going out, so to speak, and you have to keep going back and back and back because it always keeps happening, it's actually a good sign that the problem isn't in the bone. The problem is coming off the front side of that vertebrae off of which an organ is hanging. And if there's too much tension in that relationship, that vertebrae is going to keep rotating outward, going to keep getting pulled. And unless you deal with that level of relationship, you're not actually going to solve your problem. So you were asking earlier about why people pursue my work or in what order they pursue my work. And frankly, people find us when they've explored all the other more common options. And so that's really important to note, that people find us, and me in particular, when they've tried everything else and it doesn't work.
Right.
And that's pretty good. Chiropractic can be great for things. Massage can solve problems. Like, acupuncture is awesome. Do you know what I mean? I'm not the answer for everything. And there are many, many possible ways for people to solve their problems. But where I'd like people to be educated is that if you really feel like there's something going on in your body and you know it and you haven't met a practitioner who's meeting you there, don't give up. We have some really great practitioners. Sam and Kevin have an awesome website that really is a great resource for the Valley, and I would argue even South Central residents, and just great resources and education for as consumers. We're all consumers of healthcare, and you're right, this is very hard to parse through. And so I'd like to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to talk about this stuff, because it's so important that we just learn how the body is put together and what's possible. And I don't actually think that we have to settle for chronic pain, and I don't think that pills are the only answer for dealing with chronic pain. And I always offer a 20-minute free consult for people who are new to Rolfing, who want to just check into my work. I think it's really important to do that. I'm happy to do that. And those people don't always come in for a session with me, and that's okay. Education is key.
I want to follow up with what you're saying. First of all, as far as the website goes, we have a page on the website that's called Wellness Partners. So if you go to alaskaacupuncture.com, there's even a search bar, but you can find it on the left side navigation on the page. Just go to Wellness Partners, and then you'll see a list of the people that we refer to, and there's tons of other information up there. The other thing I want to say about what Leah was saying about you don't have to live with chronic pain is that what we often tell our clients is that if somebody says, I can't help you anymore, it just means in the limit of their experience, what they've experienced, in your particular case, they have not helped someone with that particular situation. What it doesn't mean is you're finished.
Right. And there's just so many ways the body can heal. And as Leah has been saying, that there are many toolboxes, there's many skill sets and modalities of care to work with. And it's not either or, you know, sometimes it can be a combination of modalities. But the most important thing is that you never give up. That
yeah,
you always
well,
keep
asking questions until you find someone who says, yes, I've worked
it's
with
about
something
results.
Like this.
And it's not only that you find someone that works, but that you actually feel better in your body.
Absolutely.
And people leave my practice every single session feeling better. And they keep those results. And that's the key, that this isn't a belief. This isn't you're not getting better or healing because someone told you that they can heal you. You're getting better in experience.
Right. It's a visceral experience that you get up off the table and you're walking different. You can feel your posture is different. You're moving different. You're breathing different.
And also commonly people comment, oh, you look better.
Mm-hmm.
People in your life, people in my clients' lives will say you're walking better. What's changed? Did you get a haircut? Did you, right? Because instinctively we know when someone is healthy, when someone is organized, and when someone is moving coherently, we need each other for that.
Yeah,
and
there's functional integrity in the systems. Everything else is going to start to reflect
out. There's a lot more ease.
Yeah.
But we have about five more minutes, and so I really want to get to what's the experience of somebody coming into your office from when they make the appointment with you and they arrive for the consultation. What kinds of questions are you asking them? What's the experience for the person on the table? And what will they feel? Because a lot of people, again, are thinking if they've had experience with massage, so what does it feel like to have somebody do Rolfing on you?
Well, it's a great question. I can only speak about the experiences I've had on people's tables. I don't know what my touch feels like because I can't feel it. Typically, people come in, I ask them to take off their socks and shoes and empty their pockets and take off their belts. I don't have people undress. Some of my colleagues still do that. I don't. It's not necessary in my training and my experience. The body doesn't lie, and it's easily seen, even with clothes on. Typically when a person walks in, I'm already pretty aware, based on our initial conversation or consult situation, what they're coming in for, what the experiences they've had to date. And so when they walk in, I'm able to look at that coherence in their movement, okay? And so I can already have an idea of what's going to be up first. Everyone has an inherent order of healing, and it's my job to work with that inherent order. And that's what allows people to keep the work that we do. It allows people to feel met, and it allows people to become better stewards or better caretakers of their own body and their own health. And I actually consider myself a teacher first. So they lay down on my table in a comfortable position. I work with people who can't lay down, so we'll find a position seated, standing. I really can work in any position. My first choice is if you're laying on my table, comfortable with bolsters, pillows, blankets, nice and toasty. And we do about 40 minutes or so of manual therapy where I'm touching both the backside and the top side of the body over, under blankets, but on top of your clothing. I'm never going underneath people's clothing to touch skin directly. And the body typically signals via nonverbal communication where there's an invitation for my touch, and so I work with that. And that's part of continuing ed opportunities that some rolfers pursue and some rolfers don't. So this is one place that you'll see some differentiation in how a rolfer works. And typically the body gets full. You know, we all remember the Peanuts cartoon where the teacher is rah, 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 and the brain can't work anymore. And it's similar with body work. So I don't want to push someone past that. That's not actually therapeutic. So we finish the manual therapy portion after about 30 or 40 minutes. And I invite the person to come back into standing in a normal gravitational relationship rather slowly, turn to their side, push themselves up. So we talk about movement, mechanics, moving more soundly. It's a teaching opportunity. And then once they're standing, I do movement education as well. Rolfing's overarching goal is to help you move soundly. It's not about creating a perfectly anatomically sound still person. It's about helping you carry that anatomical soundness into movement. And so sometimes people are surprised by the emotions they feel as they move around my space, and I ask them what they notice in their bodies. Because for many of us, when we have lived with pain for weeks to months to years, we actually have been tuning out our bodies. And so this exercise of noticing their body in a safe place with a guide, with a coach, that's kind of what I am at this point in the session, can be a very empowering and also emotional experience when you've had a lot of chronic pain. And so it's through that movement work, I'm able to help people find a coherent movement that feels safe and really good. And they want to keep it. And so that is the mind-body coherence link-up. When the cognitive brain goes, wow, this really feels great, and the limbic brain has said, yeah, we've been here for a while doing this for like the last hour, thanks for joining the team, the body then sort of works as a coherent whole in a way that it wasn't when the person first arrived in my room. And we build on that momentum between for each session. The work is called structural integration for a reason. It is the integration period after each session in which the client is hopefully walking, moving, doing whatever their body encourages them or inspires them to do to support this coherence, and then they come back in for the next bit. And I work with the body however the body needs to be met. I typically don't do 10 series for most maintenance kind of work, chronic pain kind of situations. I need you less than 10 hours. If you've been in a serious car accident, if you have a serious injury history, we'll need more than 10. And one way to think about this is, how many hours have you been living in your body? And how many hours would it be reasonable for a repairman or a mechanic to get the job done? And that's really what I do. And so the 10 series, again, is really an outdated way of looking at the body.
Sure.
We're pretty sophisticated and complex. And so I'd rather open the door to completing the whole project. And then typically when people are complete with that project and feel like they're resilient and whole and they don't need to come back to me every week, they then come back to me once every couple of years when they feel like maybe there's a little tune-up that they need.
Right.
And that's the scope.
Yeah, you know, my own experience with Rolfing, it's really surprising to me, because when I think about physical pain or, you know, long-time chronic back pain, you know, this is postural. This is something that's going to really take a continual reinforcement to get these things, my things, to line up. I think I'm going to need repeated sessions over and over again to retrain the muscles and the fascia to stay in place. And it just isn't the way it works. It's amazing. It actually does stay. And it's still a mystery to me. But as you have talked about the communication network in the body and the way you're actually aligning function, that the structure then just naturally wants to line up.
That's
right. And that's why the results hold. And that's really, to me, I mean, that just blows my mind.
Well, and it's an investment. People will get Rolfed and go through their first series of sessions, get coherent and on their lines, so as we say, and then not come back to a Rolfer for sometimes up to 20 or 30 years. And their subsequent series after that initial one is one or two sessions, and they're back on their line. The body wants to be organized. The body actually wants to be healthy.
That's
You're not convincing
exactly.
It. You don't have to train it. You have to undo the sticky bits and let it function the way it was intended to function. That's the secret.
My brother's a horse veterinarian. He's working with big old horses and bending over all the time, and his back was just bothering him, and it was really limiting his professional work. And you know, he went to a Rolfer and it changed his life, and you know, and it has really held. My
experience, I actually went through a series before we moved, and moving, usually I end up, you know, being really in pain, or I tweak something and I feel, you know, like weeks after I've moved to a different location, I feel like, wow, you know what, I just got hit by a truck. And I worked with Leah prior to the move, and it was like I hadn't even done anything. It was amazing.
You couldn't even go down mountains. You know, we'd go up hiking, You'd be beating me all the way up to the top, and I'd be huffing and puffing behind you, but I'd toast you on the way down.
Yeah, that was my first golfing experience with Linda. That was in my late 20s, and I could not go downhill without pain. And after going through a series of Rolfing sessions, I could keep up with you. On the way down.
On the way down.
I could still toast you on the way up.
Well, I guess the last little question I want to ask is, now, Ida Rolf, how did she come up with this? I mean, she was a PhD in biochemistry.
Yes.
How do you get from biochemistry to all of this?
She was curious. She had pain in her own body.
In 30 seconds or less.
Yeah, right. And she worked with a lot of different people. I think she actually stole some good work from Amy Cochran, a chiropractor back in the 50s. She worked with a large range of people. At one point, she took her young sons to Switzerland, where she was studying atomic medicine and homeopathy simultaneously. So we're not talking about the average intellect.
Okay.
We're not talking about the average person. There was something very unique about her, and she did have some health issues herself that this work did answer. And by the end of her life, when she was in a classroom, she was well known. There are many stories about her being on one side of the room and 8 or 10 practitioners working on their fellow students throughout the room, and Dr. Rolf saying to a student on the far corner, while she was blind, but by the end of her life she lost her vision, physical vision, that she could actually feel what was going on across the room, correct the students from across the room, and basically put them back on the right trajectory to make the intervention that they were trying to make from the opposite corner. And so, you know, she, as a PhD in biochemistry, she spoke at length that in order to be a good practitioner, you had to be okay with the mystery. You had to be okay to, with the not knowing. There is something greater than all of us at play here.
That's
and I think that that's a great way to end our conversation. Absolutely. I just want to thank you guys for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. It was fantastic. And we'll definitely have Leah come back again, especially because one of the things I heard her say a few minutes ago is that we have a tail. So, so I want to go into that a little bit more for sure and talk a little bit more about fascia. But, yeah, it's just been awesome having you on the show. We'll definitely do it again. And we don't have a guest currently scheduled for March 16th, but that will be our mystery guest, so we'll let you guys know on the Facebook page on Bridge to Everywhere.
Yeah, thanks so much, Leah, for joining us. I just really appreciate both your depth of knowledge but your passion for the work and for helping people and making the community stronger. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. I'm really pleased to be in the same town as you guys and lucky enough to be your friends, and I just want to thank you guys for all you do. You're enriching all of us, so thank you.
Great. You're welcome. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for joining us on the Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links and resources from our guests and show topics.